Have you ever wondered whether the problems in the world today would exist if we had deeper connection to ourselves, others, and the environment, and acted from that place?
Welcome to the Conscious Action Podcast with your hosts Brian Berneman and Kayla Grimble, who believe that connection is the key to taking conscious action as individuals and creating a better world.
We are here to raise awareness and inspire meaningful action by sharing stories, knowledge, and conversations with thought leaders and changemakers.
From sustainability to well-being and everything related to conscious living, our mission is to empower you to be the change that you want to see in the world. Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of the Conscious Action Podcast. I am Brian Berneman, your host, and I have the pleasure for this episode to be joined by Brianne West from Ethic. And thank you so much, first of all, Brianne, for being here, taking the time, and for everything that you're doing, which we are going to go a little bit more in depth through this episode. And as I always do with all of our guests, I'm going to ask you to please introduce yourself.
No problem. Thank you for having me. So my name is Brianne West. I am the most people know me from the being the founder and CEO of a company called Ethic, which is dedicated to ridding the world of single-use plastic bottles. Outside that, I'm a bit of an environmentalist, animal-obsessed, kind of a bit weird in many, many ways. And I think that probably sums me up quite nicely.
Beautiful. Just to get a little bit of the story of how you got here, can you tell us a little bit about growing up? Were you already interested on all of these topics, or was it something that you discovered a little bit later on?
I've always been quite environmentally minded. As I mentioned, I'm animal obsessed, and I always was as a kid, so I was forever bringing home hedgehogs that probably didn't need rescuing, and rescuing worms out of puddles, people used to ask me what I wanted to do, and I said, I just want to save the world, and I had no idea what that meant, but that was kind of the mentality. So I was brought up, my parents have always brought me up to believe that anything within reason, but pretty much anything is possible, and that I have the opportunity to go and do whatever I like. So I have a very privileged childhood, and I had very, very supportive parents, and whatever I wanted to do, no matter how strange, they would always back it. For example, when I was 8 years old, we had just moved to New Zealand from the Isle of Man, and I set up a pet detective agency where I would go around the neighbourhood in Dunedin and try and find lost animals. It might be an odd thing for an 8-year-old to do, but they were very supportive of that, for example.
Wow, that's quite that spirit of wanting to help and do good and initiative, and that's so amazing. I am as well really blessed with having parents that supported everything that I wanted to do, and of course guiding me into different things, but always supporting me to be that. And I know that that's not like that common and for many people, and like I do feel like I'm really blessed with that. I wanted to ask you, in terms of that, once you decided, you know, okay, like I'm going to study, did you have already in your mind when going to uni, like, this is the direction that I wanted to go, or were you just interested in, you know, like the science and all of that?
No, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, because I really, really love science, pretty much across almost every facet of it. So I did some physics papers, I did some chemistry, and obviously I did some biology. And the thing that fascinates me the most is actually microbiology. So I did an awful lot of microbiology papers, and I find it fascinating. However, the flip side is that often in sort of disease prevention and research, you often have to do animal testing. Not always, but certainly it appeared to me at the time that if I didn't want to test on animals, and I don't, that career might be a little bit restrictive. And also I don't want to spend, or didn't want to spend, my entire life in a lab or chasing grants, which outside looking in, it also seemed that that was quite a lot of what the job was. It just didn't suit my personality. So I wanted to know how I could combine sort of my environmental leanings, my strong hatred of authority and being told what to do, and this passion for science, what I could I combine them? So I'd started a couple of businesses when I was 19, when I first started university, and they were just ordinary bog standard businesses. They're first and only goal really was just to make money, as most businesses are. And I got very bored with them very quickly. So I sold them both and realized that I wanted to create a business that had a purpose. And that was where the culmination of those three passions really combined. And that was where Ateek came from. But certainly when I entered university, I had no real clear direction. If putting Ateek aside, if you asked me what I wanted to do in 10 years' time, I'd have no idea. Still don't know, but I don't think that matters.
Yeah.
As long as you follow your passions, if you are in the position to do so, then something will happen that you will enjoy eventually.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Before we get into Ateek, those businesses that you mentioned just now that you started, what did you learn? What were the biggest learnings and the biggest challenges in those?
From a personal standpoint, I learned that money is not what interests me, and I am not motivated by simply making more and more sales with no real reason. So that was why I got bored. But I did, from a business perspective, I learned an awful lot of good skills, like how important financial management is, which might seem obvious to a lot of you, but I just never prioritized it. Lots of really basic business skills, you know, how to motivate a team or how to negotiate a lease, those sorts of things. The first time I'd ever encountered them, I didn't really have anyone to help me lead through it, to help lead me through it, but kind of just figured it out. And for the most part, they worked out okay. I learned a lot. And I would say that the financial piece is probably the biggest, because it was the biggest challenge.
Wow, yeah. And so you work on this different ventures, and then you decide, okay, I'm going to go with what at the beginning was called Sorbet.
Yes. Yeah, it was at the first time. I started Sorbet in my kitchen when I was still at university. It was this idea of ridding the world of plastic bottles. I was quite naive. I was probably quite a young 23, 24-year-old. Sold these other two companies. I'd gone back to university to study. It was sort of an odd time to start a business, I suppose, really. So a combination of those three passions, as I mentioned earlier, the science and the environment and the business love of running a business, because I believe that business has the power to solve all the problems, more so than government. I think it's quicker. So I just thought, you know what, I'm going to start a business that does good. And to do that, I'm going to rid the world of some of the waste that we have. I have cosmetic chemistry knowledge. I have science degree to lean back on, so I'm going to give that a go. And just decided one day, honestly, I know a lot of people ask me for, is there a big story? You know, did you write a business plan? Did you talk to lots of people? I didn't. I just said, I'm going to do this. And then I went and did it the same day. You know, all I did was order some ingredients online and started experimenting in my kitchen.
And with that, because for me, it's interesting, when we started Conscious Action, it was literally like something like that. It was like, it was just me and my business partner. We were like, oh, let's get together and let's think what we want to do, because both of us weren't doing anything like specific at that moment. And in 3 hours, we had like the name of the business, we had a basic website and already the first few things, and zero money. And that was one of the things through the years that I really resonated with what you're saying, is that financial side of things, when you are running your own business, getting more clarity. And now, for me at least, lately this year and a half, getting some mentors to support me with that.
Yes, mentors are hugely important.
Yeah. Did you started with some mentors early on with that, or?
Not really early on. So I met my initial business partner probably 2 years in through a university competition, and he was probably my first official mentor. But I've had several along the way, and probably my biggest mentor ever has been our current COO, who was an experienced businessman who came into Ateek to help scale the business for just 10 weeks. That was what he was going to give us, and now he's still here 4 years later. Wow. And he's been able to train me in pretty much all aspects of running a business, really, which has been really nice.
Yeah. So for everyone that doesn't know enough about the issues that we have with the plastics in the world, can you go through a very brief explanation of why for you that was a big deal?
I didn't know then as much as I know now about it. And I don't think, you know, I know for an absolute fact there wasn't the public awareness around plastic that there is now. So back then, really, I just thought how ridiculous it was that we use so much plastic when we know it doesn't biodegrade and it doesn't compost. So we know that it's going to be stuck in the landfill forever. But the idea that there was so much plastic in our oceans wasn't as, I guess I kind of knew it, but I didn't really know how big the problem was back then. But I did know it just seemed stupid. So why not take the water out of products and then you can get rid of the packaging and you solve so many problems, not to make mention it's a more valuable product for the end consumer, right? Mm. So I guess they were the priorities in my mind at the point, was just trying to get rid of the waste. I didn't know the depths of the problem that I know now, like 9% of all plastic ever made has ever been recycled. 8 million tons of plastic ends up in our ocean every year, and that's a growing number. And the fact that the plastic industry is still gearing up to produce 30% more plastic in the next few years. And I am not trying to say that all plastic is bad, and it's an important distinction to note. Single-use disposable plastic is bad. In some cases, it's unavoidable. Medical waste is a good example. So we need to get better at treating what is unavoidable. But things that are not necessary and are simply used for convenience, and I think sort of paper plates or coffee cups are a good example there, we should simply not make them.
Yeah, definitely.
We should not make anything that is simply designed to be straight away disposable. It is a tremendous waste of resources.
Yeah, and I love, like, I mean, I use your products because this is one of the things for me that I live zero waste lifestyle. And it's a very interesting thing. The more that I started learning, as you just mentioned, like I started learning more and more and more, and I'm like, oh wow, like I didn't even know that. And I am researching this and I work on this space. Like, how much do people don't know? But as well, being able to have the products conveniently there. Like before we had more of the products like nowadays that we have, it was more challenging to be able to do that. And I think that this is something that for me, it's amazing to be able to tell people when I'm coaching or when I'm running events, it's like, oh, you can just go there and buy this one.
Yeah.
And knowing that, you know, I know that not only the product is good, but what the brand behind it actually stands for. And I wanted to actually go a little bit into that. For me, this is one of the things with businesses in general, is understanding what is the purpose of business and understanding if you have a strong purpose and if you have values, actually magic can happen there with strong financial understanding. what was, and you mentioned already a few things that were values for you that you brought to Etique. Can you talk a little bit more about what are the values that Etique has and that people should know about?
Yeah, a lot of people put us down as a plastic-free company, but we are much more than that, for sure. I guess you could sum it up by saying we simply want to everybody involved, and I mean everybody in like the literal sense, so the environment, is, you know, everything that we touch to be better off, or at least to not be harmed. At the end of the day, supply chains for almost every company on earth are a little bit opaque. Some of them are downright filthy. For example, in the world of chocolate, so we use a lot of cocoa butter, there's a lot of child labor. So it wasn't just about creating a product that had a waste-free product. It was about creating a business that was ethical in every possible way. So the way we approach that is by having direct trade relationships with our suppliers. So, for example, to use again the cocoa butter, we have a fair trade certified cocoa butter that comes out of Ghana. So we know that there is no child labour involved and there's no child trafficking, which is rife in the cocoa butter industry. We have a direct relationship with people who produce moringa oil in Rwanda, for example. And those things are important to us because not only do we know they're paid fairly, we know they're treated well. Beyond that is our own team. So everyone at Etique is paid a living wage at absolute minimum. And the fact that more companies don't do that, I have reasonably strong feelings and I don't think it makes me any friends, but I understand that not all businesses can pay the living wage. But that to me indicates something fundamentally wrong with the world we live in. because you cannot expect people to live on the minimum wage. Putting that aside. Other things, obviously, we have our donation scheme, so we donate 20% of profit to charity. That is simply, you don't need to make insane amounts of profits as a business. You obviously do need to give back to your shareholders because they have invested in you to grow, and by growing, we create more impact. But donating 20% of that is a really nice thing to do because it increases our impact again. And we've worked with some really phenomenal partners. So it's not, there's a lot of values, there's a lot of things and a lot of checkboxes that have to be, obviously we can't use any plastic, so our retailers aren't allowed to wrap our products in plastic, and if they do, they get told off. The way we communicate, it's got to be upbeat and cheerful. There is a lot to it, but it really boils down to the fact that people who interact with the tech in some way leave feeling better and are fairly treated.
Yes, that's wonderful. And for me, this is such a strong and current topic, having value-driven businesses, because more and more with climate change and the younger generation that actually is a little bit more aware of some of these issues, like there's much more need to be transparent because people are looking for that. And I much rather support brands that are a little bit more expensive for me, even though at the end of the day, the true cost is actually not that much expensive, but actually supporting those that I know that are doing good. And when I see that, like, I know, for example, like being vegan, like I'm looking already like a product that is not tested on animals, that there's no animal products there. Palm oil for me as well, with a lot of the products, it's a big, big issue. So knowing that your products are palm oil free. And as well, I know that all of these certifications actually are quite a big deal because also you need to prove that.
Yeah, some of them are really, really hard.
What was the process, especially, I know that the process with B Corp certification, actually, it's a tough one. Can you go through a little bit of what are the things that you need to understand to get some of the certifications?
B Corp is a good example. A lot of people say it's very tough. And I think Jamie Oliver came out a few weeks ago and said it's like having your underwear drawer rifled through, I think, something along those lines. I think it's a bit different for us because, again, we were founded on a foundation of values. So we make decisions, and we always have, from those values. So we have a lot baked in, and we don't have to worry about changing a lot. So I do the B Corp certification myself because I'm like the keeper of the values that I take. And it's a lot of the stuff in there is something we do already, but perhaps we don't have physical documentation for it, particularly when we were a smaller business and we didn't have policies, but we just did those things anyway. Yeah. So I guess what B Corp, it wasn't difficult to answer the questions or get the nice high score that we have. It was necessarily difficult to prove it. So in the early, so we've been certified twice, and actually I'm doing a third recertification right now. What it is simply documenting what it is we do. And now we're a bigger and slightly more complicated structure. It's actually easier to do that. However, if you were a company that's more typical and more profit first, which is 99.99% of most companies out there, let's face it. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say those companies are evil. Yeah, things are changing. That's just the structure. Then it would be harder to answer those questions because you wouldn't necessarily consider all of the stakeholders and your decisions you've made previously. Yeah. So I can see why it would be tricky. Mm-hmm. Palm oil certification was quite difficult. That was because that's tracing your entire supply chain. It's relying on suppliers to give you the truth, to tell you things that they may or may not want to tell you. It can be a tough one, that one. But it took us about 6 months to prove our supply chain was entirely palm-free. So we were palm-free before then, but that certification not only gave our consumers that added sort of comfort, but also made us way more comfortable in our supply chain.
Yes, that's wonderful. And I think that, going back to what you just mentioned about most businesses being profit-driven, that it is the way that it's been for the last 150 years, more and more. What What is it you think about being able to actually think of all of the stakeholders and not just the shareholders? And how do you see that going in the next 10, 20 years? Are you seeing a shift there? Is it going too slowly, or are we going in the right direction?
I definitely think we are. I think the, is it Milton Friedman's idea that a business simply exists to make value with its, for its shareholders? I think a lot of businesses are fast saying that that is an old, outdated methodology, and new businesses are being started typically have a purpose, which is fabulous. But more importantly, the big, big, big guys out there are putting purpose into what they're doing. And obviously it's going to be a lot harder for them because they are probably staffed by and on their board, they'll have people who still believe in the older way of doing business. So they've got to convince those people, and then they've got to change these massive, you know, these massive, massive machines that have been charging in one direction. And now they've got to slightly tweak that. So that's a big job. But I think it's pretty evident that a lot of those companies seem to genuinely mean this. And I do sometimes wonder if we don't quite give them enough credit for the hard work that they must be putting in. Yes, absolutely. They have made decisions in the past that I wouldn't make, and they still make decisions that I wouldn't make. But we can't underestimate the changes they are trying to make. And I think one of my favorite examples, and some people might say this is odd because it's a competitor, but is Unilever. I genuinely think they are trying to make changes that are impactful. So by and large, yes, because of consumers demanding more from their brands, without question, we are going in the right direction. But these things take time.
Yeah,
it will take. Lasting change takes time. It's easy to have this flash in the pan movement, and then nothing happens long term, right? That's easily achieved. We don't want that.
Yes,
you want something that sticks.
Yeah, and talking about change with that, what has been your experience? Because I do think I had this for many years that I believe that in position the top positions there should be women there. I think that brings more of the heart, that brings a more horizontal perspective and more of a nurturing perspective. What is your perspective on women leadership, and what has been your experience being like a woman in business leading such a big now brand?
I probably have a slightly different perspective on this than a few people, because I believe, obviously, equal representation is very important. It is not limited to just women versus men either, and it should never be women versus men. It should be all of us together. And that means every single person represented in some way, shape, or form. However, I think the conversation needs to be, what are the qualities of leadership that we like in women, and how can we encourage more of that in men too? You know, it's part of the idea of toxic masculinity, right? It's no feelings, it's no empathy. That's poisonous to men as much as women. So we need to try and encourage those characteristics in leadership, as well as getting more women on boards, getting more women in executive positions. We need to think about what it is we like about women leaders, because without question, the countries, for example, that have done the best fighting the pandemic have been led by women. So what is it about those women that has made them so successful? I mean, you can point out a few obvious things. So how can we bring that into our leadership styles?
Mm. Yes, definitely. Yeah, and I do think that actually it's a good point that you raised, because for me, this is and bringing this from like more of a spiritual realm, perhaps talking about masculine and feminine and not so much male and female, and bringing those characteristics forward. And I think that is super important. What has been, in your experience, being able to actually support the charities and support with the profit that you're having? Being able to give 20%, that's a huge percentage for a business to actually give. Why did you choose that, and what has been your experience in terms of being able to still be financially sustainable?
20% I chose because of the B Corp certification. So we went through that very early in our position, and because that is very unusual, I didn't really have anyone to turn to and ask and say, what percentage do you give? Most would be like, well, not really any. The average for businesses is just 1%, for example, around the world. But So one of the B Corp questions is, do you donate 2% of sales or 20% of profit to charity? And I thought, you know, well, it's a good number. That's what we're going to do. That was where that came from. And as to being financially sustainable, through very strong management and careful management, we are just very particular about what we do. To use an example, in our industry, typically 30% of sales is spent on marketing. We don't spend that much on marketing because we have a strong story, we have strong values, and people will help us tell our story. We're not just talking about the next new product. You know, we actually have a purpose, which helps a lot in getting our name out there, which means we don't have to spend so much money on acquisition, effectively. But giving away that profit has not been a financial hardship.
I think that's such an important thing to know from from a business perspective. I think that social enterprises are the way that businesses should be run. And I do know, because at some point I actually looked into running as a charity, and I was like, I think that might be too hard. And being able to say, okay, like, we run as a social enterprise, we are going to make a profit, but we are driven by our purpose and our values. And actually, the thing that is most important, as you're saying, is the impact that we can have in the world, more than how much money I can have on my bank account.
Another unusual perspective I have, which probably annoys people, I don't like the term social enterprise, because social enterprises should not be the outliers. It shouldn't be there's business and then there's the social enterprises over there. It should be all businesses are social enterprises and then there's bad business, right? One day I hope that is the correct way it works.
Yeah, and touching on what you just mentioned about that marketing side of things, I do find that, you know, like, your products, like, they look amazing. And I think that of course, always helps. What was the process to get to that place, especially from early on, to make the package actually compostable and to make it actually look so nice?
I didn't have much to do with it. From a compostability perspective, it's not too difficult because we simply went to a packaging manufacturer in New Zealand and said, we want a compostable package. We want the ink to be as environmentally friendly as humanly possible. And we want it to stand up on shelves. Basically, go away and find some stuff for us and we will start doing some testing. So that wasn't too difficult because we didn't have to do the sourcing. And we have a fabulous packaging supplier based in Auckland. As for the design, I didn't have anything to do with that either. So we had a company, this was way back in, would have been 2015, where we spent an astonishingly eye-watering amount on our branding as you see it today, which was definitely worth it without question. But it was a big investment back then because, unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but it's an irrefutable fact that your branding is incredibly important. And there's lots and lots of amazing companies out there that haven't invested in their branding. And I do believe that that holds back your business a lot more than people think it does. And that's a real shame. Yeah. You need to invest in how you look on a shelf. You need to look at your competitors, see what they're doing, what works, what doesn't work, and let your brand personality come through. But you really do need to invest in how you look and also how you look online. And that goes into things like your tone of voice. Like, are you upbeat? Are you serious? Are you scientific sounding? You know, a lot of thought has to go into your brand because it's personality. Atique kind of represents my personality. And that was because that kind of happened organically, but it doesn't have to be the case.
Yes. And in terms of that, for those that don't know the entire range of products, and now you also have a new product out, can you share what is the range like you have from personal care to everything really?
So shampoo, conditioner, body moisturizers, face care, so cleansers. We have baby products, we have pet care products, which of course the coolest, and we have just launched a range of concentrates. So, but again, that goes into shampoo, conditioner, moisturizers, body wash, hand wash, and some household cleansers or cleaners. So we do try and everything we put in a, everything you can see in your bathroom, we have a solid version for, and now in your kitchen too.
Wonderful. And I think, you know, it's so amazing to be able to have all of that and to be able to actually look at the precious resource that is water. that as you were saying at the very beginning, like most of the products that come in bottles, like most of it is actually water. And we can just, you know, apply that and then allow the regular water from the tap to actually do its work. And that, I think that, you know, it seems revolutionary, but also simple.
Exactly. Water is necessary for a product to work. Absolutely. But in the case of shampoo and conditioner, you use those products typically with water. So why not just use the water in your shower? That's never made too much sense to me. Body wash is probably the one that annoys me the most because we used to use bar soap. And then someone said, what if we mix bar soap with water and then we will get more product for our manufacturing dollars and we can sell it for more because it's a more luxurious feeling product. And then you've got bottled products. You know, we went from solids to bottles because it's cheaper to manufacture. There are marketing benefits. And now that's what we are used to. It's funny, we're almost going backwards with the tech, really.
Yes. And what from, like, now with the range of concentrates, what is it, like, what's the reason why trying to get that is to actually get from a bar more power in a sense or more use?
So a shampoo bar, for example, is 110 grams, and a typical bottle of shampoo is 350 mils. And because water weigh, you know, 1 gram of water weighs, 1 mil of water weighs 1 gram, it's pretty close to a 350 mil bottle of shampoo weighing 350 grams. So it sounds on the face of it that there is no point in going to a bar, but because you mix about a 10% solution on your head, that's what it typically works out to be, you get an awful lot more shampoo. So that's why one of our solid shampoos is equivalent to 3 bottles of liquid shampoo. And all you have to do is make sure you keep it dry between use. It's not really difficult. But unfortunately, some showers do limit that, which is why we've released the concentrate range. So for people who do prefer that liquid product, they can still buy a bar in store, snap it up into little pieces, pour water over it, and make their own liquid product.
Okay, that's awesome. I saw yesterday the launch of the product, and I loved the video as well. And I was like,
"Oh, they did such a good job."
Yeah, this is so good. And I would love to know a little bit more. What was the experience for you and for the business in terms of, you know, you start sorbet, like you start making this in your kitchen, and then this starts to grow and grow and grow. What was that process like?
Oh, that's a big question. I don't really think it is a process. And I don't really think I can even answer that for you, because anyone who's ever run a business will know that there is just as many downs as there are ups, and there are more challenges than there are successes a lot of the time. But what does change is your approach to those challenges. What seemed just monumental problems, can't think of an example right now. Okay, so we ran out of a surfactant. So that's a product that makes shampoos foam. We ran out of it 3 weeks before Christmas, about 7 years ago. So we missed Christmas for that year. That would never happen now because we've got much more robust supply chains. But I can assure you that feeling was terrible. It felt like the business was over, that I was a complete failure, that everything was going to fail. It was an absolutely horrible, terrible time. Now, you would skip all that drama and just go straight to, let's solve the problem. So you become much more resilient each time you have that down, which is quite nice. But, I mean, every business is different. I guess it's kind of like a staircase, right? So you start at the bottom, you don't really have any demand, but you're going to try and build it. So you do a whole lot of marketing, you get a spike in demand, and then you think, oh God, how am I going to make all this stuff? So then you may turn off the marketing a little bit and figure out how to scale. And then you're at the point where you can scale to meet that level of demand. So you go up again in more marketing, more exposure, more expansion internationally, and then you have to figure out how to scale again. We are now at the top of that staircase and going quite a nice steep curve. So we've got a lot of supply capacity above us. The biggest challenge for this business has always been supply. It has never been demand, and that's unusual, but that goes back again to having a purpose and a story that people resonate with.
Yeah. And how has this year actually impacted or has been challenging for the business in terms of both the supply chain and the being able to actually take that product everywhere?
It has not been as challenging as we thought it would be. We thought it would be very, very, very bad. We were quite worried sort of around about March, April. It has had an effect, obviously. The team were fabulous when we were working from home during lockdown. That went beautifully. So all that was fine. Difficulties have been sort of international freight. So getting products in and out of New Zealand, getting ingredients in and products out has been difficult. However, that is beginning to resolve as international freight kind of picks back up and people sort of get used to the new normal, I suppose. Sales have been pretty strong. We're in a good industry to be in a pandemic. But what has been difficult was figuring out how to talk to our audience at a time when so many people are facing hardship like never before. So you don't want to come across as, you know, business as normal, but you do still need to operate to a degree as normal. So there has been a balance to walk. And actually, we've just been really frank with our customers and said, what do you want to hear from us? Do you want to not hear from us? Do you want us to talk about the pandemic nonstop? Do you want us to carry on as normal? And overwhelmingly, in fact, I think it was 100% said carry on as normal because I just don't want to hear more about the pandemic from you guys. Fair enough, I wouldn't either. So it's been lots and lots of changes, but it comes down to having the amazing team that I have that figure out challenges on the fly.
That's amazing. And what has been the experience in terms of getting into different markets? Because here in New Zealand, it has been my experience that there's much more awareness of nature and our impact. Of course, it's not everyone, but in my experience, there's much more awareness here than in some other countries. When you started going to other countries, did you encounter that any challenges with that, or actually, you know, like people took on the product as good as like you could expect?
Yeah, different things resonate with different markets. So Japan, for example, not as interested in the plastic, although that's changing. They are becoming more aware of plastic waste, but they are very interested in the sustainable sourced and particularly palm-free ingredients. So they're quite aware about that. So it is picking what's important to that market and being sort of stronger with that message, but then feeding in the other bits for a bit of education and building that up so that they can read more should they want to. Yes, definitely New Zealanders are much more environmentally aware than some countries, but the UK, for example, is very switched on about carbon footprint, which is great. So markets are different, and I wouldn't say that New Zealanders are necessarily overwhelmingly more environmentally friendly than other countries. I would say there is just different facets. Each country seems to have a different priority based on what they've been told or what is featured in the media there. So it's just finding what that is. I've never come across anyone who said, this is a stupid idea, I don't care about the environment at all, ever.
Yeah. Sure, well, I always say, you know, like, I think that everybody actually cares. Everyone's a kind, compassionate, loving person. We've just been conditioned with different things, and then we are operating from there. But being able to actually have products that are based, as you just said, like, as your product actually touches in so many different aspects, then it's easier to actually, for everyone that cares about a slightly different thing, to be able to say, ah, yes, this product actually touches on that. So
exactly. That's the virtue of having so many values.
Yes. And with that in mind, with values and being able to lead the change, where are you now in terms of how many plastic bottles have you prevented from being created?
Very nearly 10 million. We're not quite announcing 10 million yet, but certainly not far off. The goal when I started the company was 1 million by 2020. Then a few years ago, we had to say, okay, well, we've hit that already. So now we'll do 10 million by 2020. And now we're nearly at that. The new goal is 500 million by 2030.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's a big goal.
We can all do the best that we can to actually choose and actually vote with our dollars and buying products that are not feeding on that demand. So,
yeah, that's exactly right. Look, it's not the individual consumer's responsibility to fix this mess. We have all the solutions that we need to fix all the problems that we have. We just often don't want to use the solutions. But we need big businesses to jump on board if they haven't already and start making some serious change. We as consumers can influence that through voting with our dollar, as you said, but also by telling them that's what you want, by asking them what they're doing for this. We have an awful lot of power as consumers. Mm. Obviously, businesses aren't around without customers.
Yes, definitely. And starting to get a little bit towards the end of this conversation, because I know there's so much more to unpack, but I don't want to take your entire day here. Just a few last questions. And the first one is, what is one resource that you would recommend to people if they want to read something or watch something or listen to something?
Project Drawdown. Mm. It's all about the climate crisis, and it's the top 100 solutions that we already have, and how their and what their impact would be and what their cost would be. And it is up. It's, you know, maybe it's a little bit dry for some people, but it's really quite uplifting and inspiring, because these are achievable solutions that they've thoroughly researched to see what impact they would have. And it just goes to show you that we can, if we choose to, prevent the greatest or the worst possible outcome of climate change. We can't cure it, or we can't stop it or solve it, because it's already here, but we can prevent it getting too much worse. Obviously, a lot of it's, you know, baked in, as it were, you know, for years to come, but we can stop it getting to its absolute worst level. We just have to make the decision to. And Project Drawdown has some really, really great information for people who want to do something about it.
Yes, yes. I took part of a workshop on Project Drawdown, and I've been reading quite a lot, and it's an amazing amount of information and amazing amount of analysis that has been made to,
yes,
to get to those key things that we can actually, as you say, like, it's just choosing, because the solutions are there.
Exactly. We can do it.
Mm. Yeah. What is your one go-to tip to share?
I think I probably talk about this a bit too much, but just in general, don't take or buy something if you don't need it, because not only does it help you live a more zero waste life, and zero waste is, look, I mean, it's nigh on unachievable, to be perfectly frank, and you shouldn't feel bad if you can't live zero waste, but simply saying no or not going to buy something that you don't desperately need will go a long way to that. Will also help you save money. So it's a double whammy.
Yes. I often talk about this, like, actually, like, for me, like, striving to live zero waste and more environmental friendly, actually, it's super cheap, like, comparing to what I used to spend before. So,
yeah, a lot of people spend money trying to be zero waste, but that's actually the opposite. You don't need to. Yeah. You might need to, you know, like, buy a couple of reusable something or others, but it shouldn't cost you lots.
Yeah.
Because you just don't need to buy stuff.
Yes, definitely. The best product always is the one that you already have.
Exactly.
Beautiful. What, on a personal note, what has been your latest small act of kindness?
Ooh, I hope I do one at least every day. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but I funded a friend who needed medical care for her animal. And I did that. Mm. I paid for that. I don't know.
That's beautiful. Yeah, that's such a caring thing to do for your friend and the animal.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky to be in the position that I can do that.
Mm. Yes, definitely. And similar perhaps to what you mentioned before, but what is the one thing that you wish everyone knew in the world?
I've said this now 3 times in this podcast because I think it's really important, but it is the solutions to all of the problems we face, we already have. Mm. Lots of people think we need to go and invent amazing things, and obviously more inventions or more investments in things like carbon capture technology and renewable energy is useful, but we have all of the solutions we need to solve the climate crisis, not necessarily the plastic crisis, in fairness. There needs to be more research into different materials and recycling methods and reusing methods, but in terms of the climate crisis, we have all of the solutions we need, so there is no need to be apathetic about it, and we can fix it.
Yes, we can. That's such a good reminder, multiple times.
I say it a lot.
We need to keep on repeating it. Like, we need to keep on repeating it. That's so important to do that. And how can people follow you and follow what Etik is doing?
On any social media platform, really. You can follow Atik on Instagram at Atik World, on Facebook for the same. And if you're interested in what I do, I have an Instagram where I try and chart my life.
Mm. Yeah. Wonderful.
It's pretty boring, though, really. Follow Atik, it's more interesting.
Some people like different things, so.
Yeah, well, mine is mostly about horses.
Oh, well, if you love horses, follow the personal one. If not, follow Atik. And go and check out the products on the website. Go and buy them and use them. I would love to know, because this is something that I ask a lot of times when someone is trying out something different. So if you have never used a shampoo bar or a conditioner in a bar, I would love to know your experience, and I would love to know what you think of the product and how it feels, and also the new products. I would love, and I'm going to actually, as soon as I run out of my products, I'm going to go and try the concentrated ones.
Yes, awesome. We're very excited about these, so do let me know what you think.
Wonderful. Thank you, Brianne, so much for taking the time to be here with us, for sharing, and for all that you're doing, because as you said, you are actually doing what you're talking about. You are being part of the change. So thank you so much for everything that you're doing. And thank you for everyone that has been listening to this episode. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.
What did you like the most about this episode? Take a moment to think about what change you can make in your life today.
Share your conscious action on social media using hashtag conscious action and tagging at conscious action NZ so we can celebrate your impact on the world and create a ripple effect.
One easy action we would love for you to take right now is to share, like, and subscribe to this podcast. This will help us get these messages out into the world and inspire more people to take conscious action in their own lives, contributing to the better world we hope for.